Welcome, one and all, to another mouth-watering edition of Middle-Aged Gaming's exploration of the video gaming world, with hosts Adam, Antoine, and Phil. Today's episode shines a light on esports, the phenomenon that transferred computer gaming from mere hobby into a cash-rich sport. Through StarCraft II, Valorant, and Super Smash Ultimate, we delve through RTS, FPS, and fighter games to consider questions such as, what makes a good esports game? Do different countries favor specific esports? How can new games lure existing player bases to their game? And how do games evolve to attract the audience? Enjoy the show.
All right, so hello, everyone. Once again, this is Adam hosting Middle-Aged Gaming until Krian can come back. And for those of us watching the live stream, we apologize for the time change, but wanted to provide you with the best possible content with the most possible faces. So as we've stated in on our Facebook post, we plan to be back to our old schedule in late September with our full crew. And also, before we begin, make sure that you like, subscribe, ring the bell, or sign your John Hancock or post it wherever it needs to be on our mailing list so that you can be notified each and every single time we go live. And with that, we're going to start the show. So last week, Phil introduced our theme. So I think it's only fair that Antoine gets his fair share of the limelight. So Antoine, would you like to tell us what we're going to be talking about?
Absolutely. And today we're going to talk about esport. And that's quite logical because our podcast is about gaming. And believe it or not, esport started in actually the 1970s, so it's as old as gaming itself.
Wow.
And hold on to your socks. First gaming event like this, esport, was actually 24 lads playing a game called Space War. I have no idea what it looks like. And the winner won a subscription to the Rolling Stone magazine.
Ooh.
Pretty fancy, right? Just as a comparison, so you know Valve, right? Valve is a Steam Deck and everything. Valve annual world championship in Dota 2. So let me just, it's called the International 2019. The prize pool for this event, esport, was 34.3 million. With right behind was a Fortnite 2019 event with 30 million. So we are very far from the Rolling Stone magazine, right?
Yeah, it's quite a bit, yeah.
So that's what we're going to talk about today. I'll let you let them continue.
All right, yeah, Phil, you got something to add to that?
I did have a little bit of a questions to go with it. I don't know, I'll put it in here before the show. So I was looking at top games awarding prize money when I was deciding which game I wanted to go with. I actually went with the most popular of the three that I had chosen, and I disregarded Rocket League and Super Smash because the markets for those are slightly smaller. But let's see if you guys can give me some, and for those listeners, you can be thinking, some of the top 10 games that have awarded prize money from esports in total.
I just talked about the prize pool for Dota 2. So Dota 2, it must be one.
Dota 2, yeah. Number one, $234 million.
If Dota's up there, I would assume League of Legends is probably up there as well.
League of Legends fourth, $84 million.
Okay.
Counter-Strike?
Counter-Strike, number two, $117 million.
I know the last one then.
Well, there's two more, right? Because we still need number three and number five,
yep,
right?
Yep, three and five are missing.
Street Fighter?
Nope.
I say StarCraft 2?
StarCraft 2, fifth at $35 million.
Of course.
Yes, really? I thought it would be third.
So we're still missing number three. Okay.
We're missing number three.
Huh.
A fighting game?
Yep.
Okay.
Like so a Street Fighter or something like this?
I guess Street Fighter. It's not Street Fighter. Mortal Kombat?
Not quite that. Not that type of fighting.
So then Korean's guessing Smash Brothers.
Nope.
Like an FPS or Fortnite?
It's a newer game. It's a newer game.
A newer
Fortnite
game.
Or PUBG?
Fortnite, very good, 107 million.
Hey.
Yeah. And then 6 to 10, Battlegrounds, Overwatch, Arena of Valor, Hearthstone there, Korean, for you. 25 million Hearthstone at 9, and the Heroes of the Storm. So yeah, interesting, you have a complete mix of those. And I was a bit surprised because I suppose I shouldn't be, but there was no actual sport-based esports game
Oh, like Madden NFL or something like that?
Yeah, I was expecting some, you know, because I know that the market for that's pretty big. I've even been to LAN festivals before, primarily Counter-Strike, but they have done FIFA and stuff like that as well. So I was surprised that the top 10 completely had no sports-based games. But yeah, interesting.
All right. That means that Krian is going to leave us to do some pro Hearthstone now?
It's a possibility. Since we've got that out of the way, and Phil's already on a roll, and I think Antoine went first last week, am I correct?
Yes, you are.
So then, yeah, Phil, you get to go first this week.
Okay, cool. Like I said, I was struggling, and you could have had Super Smash, and we could have had Rocket League, and I do like both of those games for different reasons. They're both kind of pretty chilled and relaxed. I've never watched either of those at an esport level, but I can imagine it can get pretty intense. Especially Super Smash, which is crazy in general when you've got a whole load of people. But instead, I went for something classic, and I did go for one of the top five list. Really, the only one of the five that I've played before and I enjoy and goes with that style of no surprise, you like Red Alert, then you're probably going to like Warcraft and you're going to like StarCraft. So by Blizzard Entertainment, I went for StarCraft 2. StarCraft 1, 1998, when it was released by Blizzard Entertainment. On Windows and on N64. Interesting enough, I can't remember that. But that must have been terrible to be playing a tactic-based game. Because I remember playing Red Alert on the PlayStation, and it was horrific trying to do anything with the controller. The original, 88%, or 80% on Nintendo 64 for Metacritic. And then the long-awaited, amazing sequel of StarCraft II in 2010, 93% on Metacritic, which also surprised me because I did not expect the sequel to end up with a higher Metacritic rating than the original, being such a fantastic game. As far as esports goes, hugely popular in Korean circles. So you had the GOM TV Global StarCraft II League. And I was also reading during its early days, one of the largest esports events, sort of like starting back around 2012. With the World Championship Series, and that progressed into the BlizzCon Global Finals. StarCraft is a pretty... And I liked that StarCraft 2 really didn't deviate from the original one too much, with the Terran, the Protoss, and the Zerg. And, I mean, like I said, I mean, I was interested into this game anyway, but even nowadays, just in general chat, I will have references to Terrans and Protoss or Kerrigan or, you know, Kaka Zerg style attack rush. I think it's done well for a game that, I mean, that's 9 years that it's been, and it's still fairly popular. I still will have people rush to go and play some of the StarCraft expansions. I failed to look and see whether there was a StarCraft 3 coming out or planned at any time. So again, that would be something that I'm interested in.
Yeah, I don't think they're planning a third one anytime soon.
Yeah, it took 12 years from the first to the second one. So on that frequency, we should expect one next year.
Well, yeah, they also kind of finished the story in a way.
I mean, that wouldn't stop them from trying to do something, though. I think if they wanted to release a game, they'd come out with something, wouldn't they? Yeah. Or a prequel or, you know, something cheesy to get that in. But I mean, what do you guys think? StarCraft, did you ever play the original StarCraft? And how does it compare to StarCraft 2 for you guys?
I never played StarCraft, but a lot of very similar game, you know, like Command & Conquer, Red Alert, Tiberium Wars. I really love this kind of game. As you said, it was a bit hard to play with a pad, but I didn't have a computer at the time, so I didn't know what it felt like to have a keyboard and mouse. So for me, I was just extremely happy to play what was the name, like Tanya with the dogs, you know, like attacking other soldiers and the Tesla coils. So it was really, really fun, and I'm not surprised. I think there was Warcraft 3 at the time as well, which was very good, and there was competition on it. I tried a couple and I got rolled over, and I was like, okay, that's not for me. No, I really love this kind of games. RTS, right? And yep. I don't think there's that many anymore, like apart from StarCraft 2, lately, I think there was a Red Alert which tried
Age of Empires.
That's a remaster. It's not really a new one, right?
Civilization, Settlers sometimes get a poke.
There's a few, but yeah, they're not, they're more niche. They're not as like mainstream as like StarCraft was. Yeah.
How much land did I did on the Total Annihilation? Love that game like crazy. So yeah, big fan of the genre and feel a bit old because that's really, you know, like our time when we were kids.
It was. I remember one of the first games when I went and bought my very first PlayStation, I went and bought Warcraft and one of the early Civilizations, and they were on big floppy disks. It was
good. The 8 inches or the...
Yeah, the massive ones, yeah. Good old times.
The actual floppy disks.
I wish I kept it. I bet they're worth a fortune nowadays.
Probably.
Do they still work?
Yeah, when I remember when I didn't play too much of the original StarCraft. My friends had it. I played a little bit of Brood War, but not too much because mostly they did the campaign. So I maybe did like a few matches, but because, you know, we couldn't play together, we didn't play that much. But I did play StarCraft 2, and I did play Warcraft 2 and Warcraft 3. And that was, I think, because Warcraft 2 basically... The humans and the orcs are identical in almost every way except for one unit. I think it was the Death Knights and the Paladins or something like that. Or maybe it was Death Knights and Mages. But they had one unit that was different and everything else was identical. And in StarCraft, you had three very distinct races. And I think that was one of the first games that really kind of did that, where the teams weren't just basically carbon copies of each other. Where you had like very unique units. And that's why in Warcraft 3, you could tell they went in a completely different direction. And they're like, humans and orcs are similar, but they differentiated them a lot. But then like the night elves and the undead play, especially the undead, played very differently. But you could still even see the undead were in very many ways played like the Protoss, you know, with their summoning, you know, warping things in and that sort of thing. And the Night Elves had some of the kind of Zergy kind of like, you know, where the Zerg could burrow and kind of hide and the Night Elves could shadow meld and whatnot. But then, yeah, when StarCraft 2 came out, we played it. And I'm really disappointed because apparently at some point, I guess when Legacy of the Void came out, they were offering Heart of the Void or Heart of the Swarm for free. So you could upgrade to Heart of the Swarm for free and that's not offered anymore. And I'm like, oh, no, you know, so at some point I'm like, I do need to get Heart of the Swarm and Legacy of the Void and play through those two games because I really did enjoy the campaign. I thought the campaign they did an excellent job with. Yeah. And then now because the video I've pulled up here is now they have StarCraft. I think they call it free to play or StarCraft free or whatever. So you can play through the original campaign, the Terran campaign, Wings of Liberty, for free. And I think you can do multiplayer for free. Or at least some multiplayer for free. And now apparently they've also added co-op missions because people enjoyed the campaign so much and kind of these specialized, like it wasn't just destroy the enemy bases. It was, you know, you have an objective that they actually, and people wanted to do those with friends. So they actually created co-op missions where you can play through kind of these special missions with a friend and you guys have a certain goal that you want to get. So I really, really enjoy StarCraft.
I had two points about why I kind of like focused on StarCraft 2. One as from a genre perspective, being that it stands alone really as the only RTS that's not just still survived, but also achieving such high success in an esports world where people are watching, which kind of links onto my second point, which is it's heavily pushed by a massive Korean support, again, which is weird for a Blizzard Western game. So is there something about regions and genres that is going on here as to why this one stands out and is still going strong, do you think, with that driving force of Korean players?
I don't think so. If I had to guess, I would say it was probably just that when the original game came out, you know, Koreans were just really competitive about it. And then it's one of those things where, you know, it's hard to let go and or it's hard to catch up, you know, and I just don't think anybody caught up with the same, nobody had that, it had the momentum that I don't think anybody else could keep up with. That would be my guess. I don't think necessarily the Koreans enjoy this genre more than another. Because if you look at a lot of like Korean made games, like Korean MMOs and stuff, they don't look anything like this. So... Yeah, I don't think it's a stylistic thing.
What do you think, Antoine?
Korean are just proving. I don't know. In the world of esports, they're extremely good. So I don't know. Maybe they just understand better than us how much money they can make. They have just that much time to put into video games. I don't know, but you just look at the rankings and it's mainly Asian and many Korean names. So I don't exactly know why. It's just these guys are strong. Maybe they are just naturally gifted to play video games. I don't know. It's just not just RTS, everywhere.
Yeah, I just out of interest, I quickly checked top 10 esports in Korea. So just to get a gauge of our difference between our top games awarding prize money, Dota 2, Counter-Strike, Global Offensive, Fortnite, LoL, and StarCraft 2. So the 2021 listing for Korea is League of Legends, PUBG, Overwatch, Arena of Valor, FIFA, StarCraft, Brood War, StarCraft 2, Heroes of the Storm, Warcraft 3. So their top nine is a little bit different.
Well, and they put Brood War over StarCraft 2.
Yeah.
So they're playing the old game more than they're playing the new one. Yeah, so I think it's a nostalgia thing to an extent for them.
Top nine. Yeah, Brood War, StarCraft 2, and Warcraft 3 all in there.
I think, if I had to guess, I think part of it's kind of, we've touched on it before, on how gaming habits in Asia are different because, like, countries like Japan and Korea and even Taiwan, you know, they basically only really started amassing their wealth in the last, you know, since the 80s, maybe 90s or something like that. And Japan was kind of ahead of the curve there. So like how we've talked about how in Asia, you would often, most people would not own a computer at home. They would go to an internet cafe and play games there. And so I think what it was is just at the time, and this is me speculating, I might be completely off base here, but I would probably have to say it was a case of they just didn't have the game options that we did in the West. And you go into a game cafe and StarCraft was huge. So pretty much every internet cafe has StarCraft installed on their machines. And, you know, people just jumped on it. And that was one of the games that they had. And now that, you know, they can play more games, they're doing it. But I think it was probably one of those things where, kind of like, I guess a kind of comparison would be something like RuneScape, where you used to have a lot of kids playing RuneScape because their parents didn't want to pay, you know, monthly fees for MMOs or whatever. So all the kids were playing the free game, you know, and now there's lots of free to play games out there that we have options on. But it was probably something similar to that, I think, where StarCraft was just everywhere and easy to acquire. And so.
Yeah, that's a very good insight.
It's a guess.
Very good guess.
All right. So anything else to say, or are we moving on to Antoine's video?
Antoine's up.
All right, Antoine, your turn.
Okay, so let's hear it for my game. And I choose Valorant, which is absolutely not in the top 10 at the moment. But, and hear me there. Developed and published by a small studio you might have heard of, which is Riot Games. Riot Games, which is League of Legends. All right, so that, you know, put it there. It's a free-to-play first-person hero shooter, just to differentiate from Counter-Strike. And I chose this game because I think it's one of the newest games played as esport. It has been released in 2020, I think in the summer 2020. And it has been completely shaking the industry. A lot of experts and top players are actually moving from games like Counter-Strike to Valorant. And they're saying that Valorant is, you know, like the rising star. And give it a few years, it's going to be top one or two. There's a few reasons for that. First of all, because it's Riot Games, they are extremely used to esports with League of Legends, and they know how to make a tournament. It's as silly as that, but they know how to make a tournament, how to make the communication. They already have a very good player base, as toxic as it is, they already have it. I'm not talking about the pro players there. The guys are pro, so that's fine. And just to tell you a little bit on the gameplay, it's like same as, you know, competitors, just like the competitors like Counter-Strike again, a first-person shooter niche. Valorant is a 5v5 defusal mode where teams take turns either attacking or defending. The teams that wins 13 rounds is the winner. You can win by defusing the spike. So it's not the bomb, it's a spike. You can just kill all the attackers, kill all the defenders. You have 1 point each time. First to 13. At the end, if you have 12 versus 12, you have a deathmatch. And I think recently, I don't know if it's just for competition or for everyone, you have to have two over. So like a 15, 13, etc., etc. And if you can't finish, there's an option as well to say, okay, let's make it a draw. We played enough. It has been 5 hours already. Enough. So you can make it a draw. Right now, it's a very new game, but it has been sought for esport right away. Right now, there's something, the VCT, the Valorant Champions Tour 2021, and how it works. Your teams, so I never played the game, but you have to have a certain rank, which has been, I believe is called Immortals. So you have to have a certain level of play, you know, like you have to be a good gamer. You have to have your team, and you go into the challengers. Then you qualify from the challengers to the masters, and from the masters to the champions. And in the champions tour, then the best team wins. And there's a pretty, I don't know, I didn't see the prize pool. I'm pretty sure it's huge. And that's how it works. So yeah, very excited about it. So I didn't know much about esports and Valorant. I saw, like everyone else, you know, the advertisement a lot on YouTube and stuff. And I saw, that's a very good looking game. And the difference from this game to others, first of all, it's kind of the genre, not really the genre, but the setting. Like this one is not like a realistic setting with blood, you know, like Counter-Strike is really military, really down to earth reality. This one is more like fantasy shooting. You have like characters, not similar, but a bit like Fortnite, you know, more like cartoonesque, if I can say so. Each, there's 15 characters to take from. Each of them have their specialty. So it's replayable like crazy. You can check, you can play all of them to see which ability match your gameplay the best. So I think this is one of the points which make it very, very much more attractive. It's a much newer game as well, so it attracts a lot of younger players as well. So this one is really the game which attracted me from all the list of all these very dinosaur games, you know, like StarCraft, Counter-Strike. Among all the dinosaurs, this is a shining star that are coming up, and I really want to see the same rankings next year to see if they're, you know, like coming up. Because even League of Legends, not that new; it's already 5 or 6 years now or something.
I love the idea of dinosaurs and then this shining star coming down. That seems like a really poignant.
I feel very lyrics today. That wasn't even on the script.
You should write lyrics. All right.
It's late, that's why. That's a reason.
Become more poetic the more tired you get.
Absolutely.
Right, Phil, you look like you got some notes you've written down.
No, yeah, I was just looking at things because you say it's coming from, you know, it's going to try and tap that market of Counter-Strike players.
Counter-Strike, Overwatch, it's, you know, it's a mix between Counter-Strike, Overwatch. So, yeah, it's going to second players from everywhere.
Why is it going to be successful, you think, at converting that type of esports player base?
I'd say you have to ask the pro. I have no idea why, but I
think it's the shining light. I presume the shining light factors here.
Yeah, I really think it's big. It's based on the heroes, Counter-Strike, or I never played Overwatch, so I really can't say about it. But pick Fortnite or PUBG or stuff. Your characters are the same. You are exactly the same as everyone in your team. And maybe the difference is in the gun you loot or stuff. Here, all of your team is extremely different. Each of the characters is different. So you have way more, much better strategic aspect. It's not only you're a good shooter, you have to be a good shooter, but also a good strategist. You have to work with your team. I want to say far more. Of course, you have a lot of strategy involved, but this involves a new level that you don't have in other games. And that's why I think it's really successful.
Yeah, you need to know what your team can and cannot do. Okay, this guy is a tank, or this guy is, you know, better at sniping or whatever. You know, it's not just kind of like you equip that gun and do this. It's like, oh, you can only do this. So
yeah, and depending on what power can they use, you know, can they shield the whole area or like make a smoke screen? Or there's lots of different very useful powers, but you have to know when to use it so as not to bother your friends. Actually, if you bother your friends as much as the enemy, was the point.
Yeah, so this, I mean, I played the beta for Overwatch. I never played the actual Overwatch once it finally came out. But this sounds pretty similar to Overwatch in a lot of ways. I mean, is there a way that it differentiates itself, or is it really just kind of another contender in the same field?
I think it's kind of in the same field, but I never played either of these games, so okay. I just speculate here.
This one is free to play, correct?
It is, yeah.
Okay, because I think, is Overwatch free to play, or do you have to actually pay for Overwatch? Okay, because I feel like you might have to pay for Overwatch. So
possibly.
Yeah, but like you said, I think you're right. I think Riot Games has that. Okay, so Korean's saying that you do need to pay for Overwatch. So this is a free option if you're the kind of person who's always wanted to play Overwatch. So that might be part of the reason why they're going for this, is they're kind of like, hey, let's offer that
Korean,
free option.
Can you double check that Valorant is free? I don't want to see crappy stuff around.
I think it is. I could be wrong. But yeah, they could definitely be kind of like jumping in on like kind of like Fortnite when they came in. They're like, oh, hey, here's PUBG, but it's free, you know.
So that's definitely, it's fun.
Yeah. And definitely, I think you're right. Riot has the pedigree when it comes to esports. So they know maybe, you know, they're not a shooter company. So that part's new, but they have the experience with the. Okay, so he says Overwatch Standard Edition is $20 US, which isn't that much, actually. That's still pretty cheap. It's not a full price game. That's like a third of a regular price game, almost.
Yeah, but it's not new, huh?
No, it's not that new. And in fact, now they're coming out with, what is it? Overwatch 2 is on the horizon, coming out soon. So it used to be $50 when it came out. So now it's quite a bit cheaper.
You know, I've been, like I said, the only esports, I've been to the Gathering in Norway a couple of times in Hamar, and that's massively Counter-Strike. And I remember, I mean, it was a while ago since I've been there. You walk around and just everybody all the way through the night, just with these huge, big, massive supercomputers with lights coming out all over the place, like a little mini disco. And they were all heavily based on Counter-Strike. And I'm just in my head, I'm thinking, just from watching the video, will they migrate to this type of game? Will it be that popular? I don't know. Maybe I have doubts.
There might be a commercial aspect behind, because I saw when I was doing my research on Valorant, I don't know if it's the game or Riot Games, but a few top esport player moved to Valorant and made a big announcement about it. So, you know, like if they make such a big show of leaving the train, maybe other people might want to do the same.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I know they've been saying that with the Asmongold switching over to Final Fantasy 14 has been a potential impact for the current exodus out of there. But yeah, I guess we'll see. It will be an interesting thing, maybe to look back in a year's time and see what those rankings are and whether it has made an impact. Who knows? Because obviously with Fortnite skyrocketing up into the third place, it's obviously a sport, we kind of probably know that, that's growing and becoming stronger, and there's more people watching, there's more money invested, and these events are worth more. So it's much easier for games to spike up that table, in that if it's really got demand and people are really going to watch it, then they can make a lot of money. And I kind of wonder, do you think that's part of certain game releases now, are more focused towards hitting that esports market?
Absolutely, and I have a point about that that I'll get to later. But yeah, I definitely think the esports market is a big draw for some games where they come out with the intention this is going to be an esport. And I've seen games that come out and they say like this is going to be an esport before the game's even released. Like that's the design.
Well, this one was definitely.
Yeah, yeah, and I think like the Asmongold thing, I think is definitely part of the reason why people jump to things like this. Like, for instance, I had never heard of this guy. He was one of the biggest World of Warcraft streamers out there, but I had never heard of him. And then he jumps to Final Fantasy 14, and now myself and I know there are lots of other Final Fantasy 14 people who had never heard of this guy are very aware of this guy now. So, I mean, it completely, by a fairly significant margin, expanded his brand. And I think a lot of times if you are, say, playing a game like, Overwatch, and you're not the top ranked, but you're one of the top ranked, you know, like if you're like, say, number 7 or something like that, you've got a little bit of name recognition, but not as much as the top guy. If you jump over to a game like Valorant, you know, the top guy is probably not going to jump over. He's probably going to stick with what keeps him popular. So you jumping over is basically going to draw in people that weren't necessarily, you know, like people that were maybe League of Legends fans, and they know the people that make League of Legends are making this game Valorant, right? So you get some of those, you can bring some of the people with you from your old thing, but now you're starting over from scratch in this new thing. You know, you're not ranked number 7 guy anymore. Now you're competing for the number 1 spot again. So I think for some of these professional gamers, I think jumping is a bit of a strategy to keep their name relevant.
I was very positive about Valorant the whole time. I just want to put one warning. As I said, this is a Riot Games. This is from the guys of League of Legends, which means you're going to find a lot of the same community in Valorant. That means it's very toxic. Before you play Valorant, just know you're going to be pissed off, not by the game, but, you know, by the players. It's okay. Just be warned. It's toxic. Just want to put it out there. So, you know, you know when you get the game, when you start playing.
All right, so Korean's saying Antoine's a little bit soft. I don't know, because I'm actually pulling Antoine from the same audio feed that I'm pulling Phil from, so I don't know how to.
I'm always that. A little soft.
Okay, that could have gone a different way.
Anton's trying to increase our viewer base.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Our ratings.
But I think it's definitely interesting, and definitely that I think that's just a general problem that you have with free-to-play games, where, like I said last week with League of Legends, if you don't have to buy your account, then you making a new account is trivial. And so, you know, people will troll because they can just burn through an account, harass all they want, get banned, make a new account, you know, no biggie. Whereas in a game like, say, maybe Overwatch or StarCraft, where you have to pay to get in, you know, if I've already bought the key and then my account gets banned, oh, you know, I have to buy a new game. No, man, I'm not paying $20 just so I can, you know, make a 7-year-old cry. But hey, if it's free, you know, why not? Yeah. All right. So is that all we have to say about that? Or is there any other final points on Valorant?
No, it's okay. Up to you now.
Up to me now. Oh, okay. Well, then. So it's funny that Phil mentioned Super Smash, because that is actually the game that I chose. When he said, you know, he listed like 3 games out, and he says, oh, what if people said, you know, here's, I was thinking of these 3 games, and I was like, oh yeah, you know, pick whatever you want. I have backups. So I did have some backups, but, this was actually my first choice. So I'm kind of happy that he went with something else. And I'm also kind of happy that he went with, StarCraft, because this means that we can actually cover 3 different genres in esports. You know, we've covered RTS, we've covered shooter, and now I'm going to be covering the fighter. So Super Smash is pretty old. It originally came out on the N64. There's been pretty much one iteration of Smash on each Nintendo console since. You had Super Smash on N64. You had Melee on GameCube. You had Brawl on the Wii. And now we have Ultimate on the Switch. And then there was some other random version that was on the DS and the Wii U, but I don't think anybody ever talks about that one. So this is developed by Bandai Namco and also Sora Limited. Okay, I don't know who they are, but apparently Sakurai, the guy who does most of this stuff, is part of that company. And obviously it's published by Nintendo. And this version of it, Ultimate, was released on December 7th in 2018. It is a fighting game, but it really changes up the way fighting works. So in your traditional fighter, you have a life bar, you punch, you kick, whatever, and that life bar goes down until your enemy is defeated. In Super Smash, every time you attack them, each attack has impact, which will knock them back an amount, but it also adds up damage, but the damage is calculated as a percentage. And basically, the percentage works that you are knocked back by, you know, however far you should be, plus or times the percentage of, you know, how much damage you have added on. So, you know, where you punch a guy the first time, you know, he doesn't really move. But, you know, as you get it up to 100% or 200%, you know, you punch him with the same punch and the guy gets knocked, you know, way far back. And the point is to knock them off the level. And other games have copied the idea, but nobody's really captured the essence. I know there are games like Brawlhalla that do the kind of platform thing, but all the characters basically fight the same. They don't have the uniqueness that you have in Super Smash. PlayStation All-Stars was an attempt to kind of create a PlayStation version, and it was a good idea until they completely botched it with the let's not do the knock people off thing. Let's build up a super meter, and then the super meter is the only thing that can kill them. And yeah, it was, if they had just stuck with the Super Smash formula and with the same character, you know, if they had kept the characters, the moves and everything and just done the Super Smash knock them off the level thing, that game would have been fantastic. I don't know why they didn't do that. That was probably one of the dumbest moves I've ever seen in gaming. You know, let's reinvent the wheel as a triangle. Yeah, no, that's a terrible idea. But Super Smash is just becoming really popular, and now it's getting to the point where they are adding, it used to be exclusively Nintendo characters. Now they're adding non-Nintendo characters, and they've added everything from Ryu in Street Fighter to Snake from Metal Gear Solid, and Cloud and Sephiroth from Final Fantasy. They have, was it Dragon Quest and Fire Emblem characters and, all sorts of things now. And apparently one of the biggest pushes is to get Goku added to the game, which I don't know if that's going to happen, but people have been pushing for Goku for a really long time. But that would be the first, I think, non-game character. Oh, no, actually, Goku's in a couple games. So, but yeah, it's just really fun. The characters are, you know, they're crazy and they play very differently. You know, Samus is predominantly ranged. She, you know, you don't want to get up too close. Whereas if you get somebody like Ganondorf, you know, he's very melee focused. And so you get a lot of dynamics. There's a lot of things that you can do to save, like, you know, double jumps and whatnot. So it makes the combat really, really crazy. And what I'm going to be talking about here is basically expansion versus balance. And I don't know if Super Smash does it that well, because I haven't really played it in a long time. It's one of the few games that I would be getting a Wii for if I'm really disappointed they didn't come out with a Wii Pro, but if they did, Super Smash is probably the first game I would buy, if I'm being entirely honest. But they originally had 76 characters in this version, and now they're are 88. They added 12 DLC characters. So there are 88 total possible characters, and there are a bunch of different levels you can do. And in, of course, when it comes to esports, sometimes they do have characters that are banned. Meta Knight, I think, is banned in most professional game, in most professional matches, just because he's too powerful or whatever. The character Hero from Dragon Quest is often banned because he has an attack that where he does something and he gets a random spell from the game. And one of those random spells is an instant knockoff. And so, you know, it you're not guaranteed to get it, but if you get it, it can make the game a little bit too unpredictable. And so they do have to ban some characters. And I think especially when you have 88 different characters functioning mostly differently, you do have some kind of clones of each other, but mostly different. I think balance can be a real issue and can be really hard to do. And that was one of the things that I remember with StarCraft. People were saying it was actually amazing how well the original StarCraft was balanced between the three races, where people weren't just automatically picking Zerg every time or automatically picking Protoss every single time. So as far as the future of this game is concerned, I think this game is going to continue for a long time. I don't think we're going to get a new Super Smash anytime soon, just because it seems that they do only come out with one per generation. So I think as long as we're on the Switch, I don't think we're going to get another Super Smash Beyond Ultimate. I think we're going to have to wait for the next Nintendo console for that. However, they have announced that there is only one DLC character remaining. So it's going to be taken up to 89 characters, and then they said they're going to stop after that. So it hasn't been announced who it's going to be yet, but a lot of people, you know, Goku. So we'll see.
I think they'll keep releasing, to be honest. I think what they say now and what they'll do in like a year's time, if the player base is still going and they've got the opportunity to make a quick book, they don't plan to release any.
It's absolutely possible, yeah.
Yeah, now Super Smash, I've played three versions of it. I think I played Brothers, Brawl, and Ultimate, and I really do like it. In fact, even my Switch is the Super Smash skin.
Oh, yeah?
I bought it with the controllers. Yeah, which was, I was a little bit underwhelmed with, to be honest. It was just a plain gray, and then it just has like a, sort of like the Target logo on both sides, and that's about it. Which is a bit disappointing when I've seen some of the other ones come out, especially because the Pokemon ones were out at the same time and colorful and exciting. So this was one of the first games. It was the first game. It came installed on my Switch, and I really got into it. I've always have. I think for party play, it's fun. It's a bit crazy. You've got the options to change, you know, every man for himself or team based, and changing the maps and changing those characters that you play as well. There's so much depth and stuff to really get your teeth into. And I was reading. That there was supposed to be a $250,000 pool for split between Super Smash Melee and Super Smash Ultimate, which kind of took me aback. I'm not entirely sure what the split would have been because the competition got postponed with the COVID. Which should be a game by itself, would be quite interesting. Yeah, I was like, I wonder, that's kind of interesting that they still have the GameCube edition compared to how I feel like it's progressed. I wonder why. What do you think the reason behind that is?
From what I heard of Brawl, Melee was the superior game. So I heard that there were some things in it that just, I don't know if they necessarily went backwards or if they just tried to create improvements that ended up not being all that much of an improvement. But I've definitely heard that Melee was significantly better than Brawl. And I've heard some people prefer Melee over Ultimate as well, but I haven't played Ultimate, so I don't really know. But I think Brawl was kind of a low point in the series, so that's why you see Melee and Ultimate, not Brawl and Ultimate. From what I've heard, Ultimate's still pretty popular, and it has a huge cast of characters. I think part of what some of it too is I've heard people saying that a lot of the characters that they've added, because in Melee, they added Marth and Roy from, I think, Fire Emblem. And they had, they were sword characters, and they didn't really have any weapon characters prior to that. And so, sorry, cat's climbing behind the computer. And so they definitely, Marth had this, he was fast, and there was this problem where when you jump on, you can grab onto the edge. And with a sword character, you can just slam on the edge. And basically, if somebody knocks you off, there's almost no way to get back up unless you have certain characters who can kind of like do a dodge roll as they climb. And I've heard that a lot of the sword characters kind of play similarly to that, where they can just kind of zone you out. And so some people aren't too happy about that. But I think maybe because there's a lot of those kind of characters in Ultimate, that might be part of the reason why.
Yeah, I've not really played it. I've not played this in about 9 months. So, to be honest, when you said that, I was just checking. I didn't even realize they'd released Sephiroth as a playable.
Yeah, and he's got a long sword. Like a really long one. Yeah, Sephiroth is definitely... I've heard actually Sephiroth people were surprised because a lot of people were like, oh no, this is going to go awful. But I've heard people saying that Sephiroth was actually surprisingly way more balanced than people were expecting. So we got a Vishal here. Hey, Vishal, how you doing? He's been watching our show for a while, so he's saying hi, so we're going to say hi back. Also, Korean was asking what the demographic that plays this. I think, honestly, it was originally on the N64. I think it was kind of geared towards children, but I think at this point, the children that have grown up with it, so I don't think there really is a demographic anymore because it does appeal to children. But you have a lot of people who've been playing it for a long time and grown up with it. So I don't think it has like a real set demographic anymore.
I think you see that in Ultimate with the amount of characters they've got. You know, that's trying to appeal to every market and every game and everybody out there that you can go, oh, you know, you like Pokemon, here you go. You can play Jigglypuff or you can play, you know, Pikachu. But for the more experienced gamers who've been with this, you know, for the beginning, it's, you know, you've got the original characters in there. You can play Zelda. You can, you know, play whoever you really want to. So... yeah, I think they kept their open.
Yeah, yeah. And then you have like K. Rool, who's, you know, I don't think he's been in a game any recently at all. So I think in some cases people are kind of like, who's that guy? But, you know, old people from Donkey Kong Country are like, oh, yes, I remember this guy on the N64. You know, so I think that's part of it as well. There's a lot of nostalgia built into it that children just don't get.
Oh, I'm a big fan of the game. I mean, I used to play with my brother hours of it on the GameCube. For Melee was, what, 20 years ago now? Is it something like this?
Probably.
I spent way too much time on it playing. That was fantastic. Now I play with my son on the Switch. It's funny because he doesn't know most of the characters, you know, like Rob. He has no clue. It's a little crappy robot which was on the Nintendo market back in the 80s, which is an absolutely unusable toy that you had to play as a second player, or stuff like this. But no, I really love the game. It's it has a very long lifespan. So many mods, so many things to do. Apart from Hyrule Warrior, I think it's one of the longest game on the Switch. So really, really good game. Really like it. I'm a fan. Nothing more to add. Yeah, I'm just not a fan of the DLC characters. Too expensive, too often. You see, it's just to make you spend your money. You see, it's just because they're just releasing characters that kids know. And they're like, ah, daddy, I want this character. So strangely, that's not that's not King K. Rool, which come back from, you know, like 20, 30 years ago. Still, it's a good game.
Yeah, part of the other reason why it might have been... why they might go with Melee is because in Melee, I mean, you just had the characters, but in Ultimate, I know you can kind of upgrade them with spirits and stuff like that.
Oh, that's different. I think at least from what I played, it's more like in the solo play. You have adventure as a solo play, and you boost your character with spirits, and you need to, because it's kind of hard, actually, even for kids, really. Even for me, it's kind of hard. So for my kid, sometimes it's a bit tough.
Here's another interesting trivia question. I love finding these little tidbits. Who are the oldest two characters to appear in Super Smash?
Rob would be.
You mean like as in, I mean, Mr. Game & Watch probably.
Yeah, Mr. Game & Watch is number one from 1980.
The Ice Climbers maybe?
Yeah, they're pretty old too. Yeah. Mega Man?
Yeah.
Pac-Man.
Second.
Pac-Man. Also 1980. Yeah, debuts a month later.
Oh, well, I didn't know. I didn't know you could play as Pac-Man. And
Pac-Man is the oldest third player character.
Oldest third player character.
Third party, sorry.
Oh, okay. I was like third player character. If you're player one or player two, you can't be him. You have to be player three. I was like, oh man. All right. But yeah, that kind of brings me into the other thing that I was going to talk about. I have a little video for it as well. Is Dead or Alive 6. So Dead or Alive, I know Antoine's probably going to hate this game because this is the, you know, dress up your waifu game, right? But when Dead or Alive 6 came out, this is what Phil was talking about before. There was a bit of a controversy because they basically said they were going to tone down the sexualization of the characters. And the reasoning was to appeal to an esports market. So they were saying that if it's too sexy, then it's not going to, you know, people wouldn't want it to be an esport. They would feel ashamed to play it. So they actually said that they were going to tone it down in order to be able to appeal to esports.
Are you sure it's not a sponsoring issue? You know, like sponsors wouldn't put money in a game, which is a bit,
specifically said it was for esports. Yeah, well, again, because sponsors and stuff. Yeah. But the whole point was to appeal to an esports crowd. Now, I guess supposedly they actually lied and they didn't tone it down that much, but I guess they may. But there was a lot of kind of controversy, and I think if you look at the players' starting outfits are far less revealing than they had been in previous games. But you can still unlock the revealing outfits if you want to.
Of course, it's Dead or Alive, you know.
Right, but yeah. So there are definitely games that are designed with esports in mind from the get-go, and I think in some cases, like in Dead or Alive, a lot of people in the community were saying, why, you know, this is a terrible idea because the people who play this game play it for jiggle physics, that's what they want, and you're taking that away from them. And the people that don't play this game for those reasons are never going to play this game. So you're taking it away from the people, you're taking it away from your fans, and you're not likely to gain anything from it. So people were saying, you know, just keep appealing to us. Don't make it an esport. We have Mortal Kombat. We have Street Fighter. Those things exist. Let those things exist and let us have this niche, you know, pervy game. And to date, I have never heard of a DOA esports tournament. So
good thing.
Yeah. So just bringing that up, that apparently some people do have that feeling. But I wanted to get your guys' opinion on that. I mean, do you think that appeal, like going for kind of an esports market, can be a bit of a problem, in that maybe sometimes, kind of like how people maybe 10 years ago were always complaining, why does every game have to have a multiplayer aspect tacked on to it? You're taking away from the single player experience by tacking on this multiplayer side thing. Do you think that's kind of a similar thing, where maybe for esports people are taking away some of the kind of crazier or more interesting or interesting or more fun aspects of it, and in order to kind of appeal to a broader market? I mean, what do you think? Do you think it could be a problem, or do you think it's not a problem?
I'm gonna start then. I don't think it's really a problem, because look at Valorant. Esport is, you know, it takes years of planning and creating a game. So if you want to make it an esport, you have to plan it from the very start. And you know that your game is gonna be released for esport. If you want to make a Dead or Alive esport game, keep it as it is. You're gonna have your main player base, you will have less sponsors and less money, because they don't want to go in more like fan service, maybe edgy kind of publicity. It would still work less, definitely, but it would still work a little bit. So I think most of the game have a potential for esports, as at least most multiplayer game. After, is it really in their interest to focus their team? Organizing tournament, managing esports, that's a very big logistic. You can't do that on every game. You have to focus on what game you think is going to work. So, yeah, I think it's really a question of more like, can the game be in sport? Can we publisher or editor, can we afford to have more than one game? If we have one game as an esport, which one should it be? how do we handle the logistics, the management, the tour. It's worldwide tour. It's massive. I have no idea how big it is. You know, the size of the servers, the size of the money they throw into it. That's my take on it. It's more like a money thing than really problem with the game.
See, for me, I'd come at it from the other way. I'd be opposite of that viewpoint in that thinking, you are right, anything has the potential to be an esports game within, you know, that has to have that sort of like player versus player side built into the game. But it's all about popularity. If the game becomes popular, then it will become an esport. You know, if there's people willing to go to some festival and tournaments and sign up and play and people watching and viewing figures, in the end of it, it's all about viewing figures. And if you're going to get that combination of a game that plays well, player versus player, and it gets that market and gets that viewer figures, then I think it's an inevitability that's going to become an esports. And I would say that something like Super Smash, in a way, always had that potential to be active. It's live, it's violent, it's, you know, thriving game. And I suspect that that's going to be something that becomes far more popular now, sort of like they've started to focus on it more. You're starting to get tournaments based on it. I'd say that's like a newerish game. It's an old game, and it's been there for all the time, but now it's starting to get that potential to become an esports. And again, I would expect that to be something that grows and develops well. Not necessarily because it's a game that was ever designed to be an esports game. It just happens to be good viewing figures, has a popularity, like I said, fulfills those criteria that fit becoming an esports game.
And yet, I mean, I might not know about it, but see war games like Call of Duty, Battlefield, this kind of thing, they are very popular and there's very big multiplayer, but are they really big in esports?
They weren't in the top 10.
Really? Call of Duty?
It wasn't in the top 10, right?
Was it?
No,
I don't think I heard. I don't think about I heard. Anyway, because they are popular, but they are really seeing game very often, so maybe that's why they can't afford to...
Oversaturation.
Yeah, like all the game which are in the top 10, I think most of them, there's not a lot of... They don't release game every year. Like look at StarCraft, look at Fortnite. Fortnite working season, so it doesn't really work, but...
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because definitely I think in Super Smash's case, I don't think it was designed for esports. I think it was just it had a large enough fan base that people came together and they're like, hey, let's kind of do these fan competitions. And then those just kind of grew and grew and grew. But then, yeah, at the same time, you do have games that are very specifically designed to be esports right out of the gate. So it's hard to say. Yeah, I don't really know. That's why I was asking.
Fair enough.
All right. So that's going to take us up to time. I have some extra news stuff, but that's okay. We can always save it or just skip it altogether. So that is it for today. Thank you for catching the show. And once again, don't forget to like, subscribe, ring bells, click whatever you need to find us again. All right. And yeah, we'll be around. Phil and Antoine, any closing statements? No? All right. Well, with that...
find us on any social media and ring bells
anyway.
And stuff. Whatever.
All right. Find us wherever you want to be. Okay. And
we are here for you.
That's right. What are we doing as far as streaming this week? So I am not going to be able to stream this week. I shouldn't be back until Monday. And I am probably going to be streaming... I can't remember the name of the game. Something Hunters or something. It's the new PlayStation Plus... free game, so I'll probably be streaming that on Monday. What about you guys? What are your plans for streaming?
Yeah, I've been rubbish the last week. I've been playing my Switch like crazy, and it's not easy to stream, so I've just been rocking the Diablo 3, and I've been doing 9 Parchments, so I've been not streaming at all on either my PlayStation or the stream, and I have my COVID jab today, so I don't really suspect that tonight I'll be in the particular mood to stream. But Sunday I will get back to streaming something on Steam, whatever that is, maybe some more Vermintide.
All right, so if Phil wakes up, he will be streaming on Steam. All right, what about you, Antoine?
I did some Spellcaster University today, and I'll do it again Thursday, Friday, very likely, I think, Thursday. Maybe Friday if I can, but yeah, I'll keep doing on this one.
All right. Well, and with that, that brings us to the end of the show, and we'll see you all again soon. So goodbye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. And thanks, Vishal, for dropping in.